Hey, good afternoon, everyone. Thanks for listening. We have two articles in front of us, and Brian's in Israel, Christian Post, and I'm looking for
Fox News, I think.
Fox News? Yeah. Wow. So, yeah. Francis Chan, best known probably for Forgotten God, maybe. Is there a book that I'm not thinking about?
Crazy Love.
Thank you. Yeah. Right. Predated it. Okay. And California guy, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Isn't that his church?
Yep.
Out there?
Southern California.
Built a giant complex of a out of his living room or something.
Yeah. Started with 30 people probably and then grew it to a couple thousand.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. And so Francis Chan's moving to Asia to be a missionary. I don't want to be judged as a coward. And interesting enough, I was texting and emailing with Ryan Howard, who's over there right now in Asia. Where is he at in particular?
Burma.
Yeah. And he said, and Francis Chan's coming over here. And so I guess he knew about it. So pick it up there, cowboy. Let's hear you read.
Jack is saying.
No.
All right. Bible teacher and best-selling author Francis Chan announced he will be moving to Asia in February to be a missionary and challenged other Christians to ask themselves if they, too, are willing to boldly follow God's call on their life. My family and I are going to move to Asia in February, announced Wednesday during a chapel sermon at Azusa Pacific University. A few months ago, we were in Myanmar, and my wife and I and kids, we were just with a translator going from hut to hut in these slums, trying to explain to people who Jesus is. These people had never even heard of him, and the eagerness, the way they listened, seeing people get baptized, it was just like, wow. What do we do on a normal day that even compares to this? As we got on the plane home, I was like, honey, I think it's time to move, Chan said. I describe it like this. I feel like I've been fishing in the same pond my whole life, and now there's like thousands of other fishermen at the same pond, and our lines are getting tangled, and everyone's fighting over stupid things, and one guy tries some new lure or bait, and we go, oh, he caught a fish. Let's all try his method. And it just feels like, what are we all doing here? What if I heard of a lake that's like a 5-mile hike away and no one's fishing it, and they are saying, man, the fish are biting. Just throw a hook in there and they'll go for it. Man, I'll make that 5-mile hike if I love fishing, the Crazy Love author continued. What would keep me at that same pond? I'll tell you what would keep me at that pond is I built a house on the pond, and all my friends have houses on the pond, and we don't even fish that much. We just go out and we hang out and we talk and we play, and I don't want to leave my friends. But if my calling is to go fish and there's no one fishing over there, why wouldn't I go?
All right, do we want to stop there? Is that enough to have a conversation? I mean, we can keep reading the article, but I'm just curious because, I mean, he's making quite a, you know, an illustration here to lead down a path of justification for his course of action. And by implication, isn't he suggesting that others that don't go to that pond are kind of that way, or is he not? Am I reading too much into it?
No. I think that would be your natural response, would be that if you hear someone say that, and of course we've all sat in missionary conferences and have heard some explanation along these lines, and have felt either the validity or tried to fight in our minds and justify why we're not going to listen to the validity of whatever the speaker was. And but I think, I mean, obviously he makes some great points. I mean, when you consider, he's not wrong when it comes to, you know, when I, even in this town, but especially when I go back to Chattanooga, I mean, it seems like there's hundreds of churches. And you drive through, I mean, you can't go like two blocks without seeing a church, and you just think, you know, my goodness, what are we doing? You know, but you ask yourself, is this place really seem to be changed? I mean, does it seem like a Christian town? Well, no. You know, so there's lots of interesting discussions to be had about this, but I don't think in any way that he's necessarily describing it incorrectly. I mean, he's kind of hit the nail on the head when it comes to, you know, the kind of churchy way we do things in America.
Jack, what are your thoughts?
Okay, I get the idea of we bandwagon ideas. Prayer Jabez, 40 Days of Purpose. the list could go on and on and on.
Okay.
Faith evangelism. I mean, because it's working in one church doesn't mean it's going to work in your church. So I get what he's talking about with the ice, with the lines being crossed, everything else. I'm sure in Southern California there is a I don't know if they have the proliferation of churches the way we do, but I'm sure there's plenty of them and everything else. My thought process is, okay, on the Sea of Galilee, they kept fishing the Sea of Galilee. And they kept fishing the Sea of Galilee, and they kept fishing the Sea of Galilee because fish had baby fish.
Right.
And the fish population continued to grow, and it continued to shift. And because you caught 100 fish today doesn't mean there's not going to be fish there tomorrow. And he's given this idea of, you know, the pond's kind of running dry because there's so many people on it, and we can't find the fish because we're all over each other and everything else. But the thing of it is, hey, we got a massive pond right across the street in the school we have. You know, there's constantly people coming in. God builds the church. God does this. But in that essence, if God is pricking your heart, and evidently he's pricking Francis Chan's heart, then Francis Chan is absolutely right in saying, why would I want to stay at this pond when God's calling me to go fish this other pond? Well, I can tell you why, because I've become entangled in this world, which we're not supposed to do. 2 Timothy chapter 4, is it?
2, 3, 4.
So the idea of, you know, we honor the one who called us to be a soldier. We don't entangle ourselves with this world. And in that essence, he's absolutely right. He needs to get up and move, but he doesn't need to paint the picture that if I'm not being called and I'm still going to fish this pond, then I'm wrong.
Right, because one could equally make the argument that if God placed you in a location where there's a body of water, that he put you there to fish that body of water. I mean, you could equally make the argument of, you know, I guess in a way kind of manifest destiny. You know, if God put you near the Puget Sound, then you're the people who are supposed to go out there and troll the thing and get the fish in for the nation.
Yeah, and he's absolutely right. Now, if you're sitting there watching the bobber float on the water and you're kicked back and we're drinking a soda and we're just talking and our lines are out there but we're not really doing anything about them and be observant, well, that's just bad stewardship. Period.
Well, he says, but if my calling is to go fish and there's no one fishing over there, why wouldn't I go? The question I have is, if my calling is to go fish, I would love to unpack that a little bit. Is that the calling of every single Christian to go somewhere and fish? Or is the calling of every Christian to do life, and as we're doing life, fish? Because it's not quite the same.
Right.
Well,
I'll make you fishermen.
Well, that's what I'm saying. There has to be a connectivity in his mind between Matthew 28 and the call to, I will make you fishers of men.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're to go make disciples and teach them all things that I've commanded you. And one of the first commands was, be fishers of men.
Right, follow but me, do I fish for men as I'm doing life, or do I, or is fishing, that's what I do. I just go, and that's where I go, and I go from pond to pond to pond, and all I do is fish, or...
Well, certainly there was an expectation for the 12. They were called to be go fish, separate from living their life. Come and follow me. Leave your nets, come and follow me. Leave what has been your daily routine life. But we don't see that with all 120 in the upper room.
Right, like, you know, Lydia comes to mind, someone who's in
rich.
That locale, and her living and her lifestyle and what she did
right.
still glorified the Lord, but it was there. She didn't move. It wasn't itinerant. She didn't move around.
Aquila and Priscilla moved around, but that's because they kind of had this mobile tent-making business. But in the same, and plus persecution drove them some places.
So what we see is it's somewhat different depending on who it is.
Yeah, like I said, if Francis Chan's being called, go.
Yeah.
Leave the house that you say is holding you back, go. But I may not be being called. I may be, like you said, feeling I'm called to stay in this locale and keep persevering and fishing this pond that it may be have 15 other fishers in it.
And I feel like some people feel called to reform fishing in the pond, the locale. You know, hey, we need to fix the way we're fishing. We're not doing it right.
Martin Luther.
Well, Titus 1:5, this is why I left you in Crete, so that you might put what remained in order and appoint elders in every town as I directed you. Well, can you imagine how frustrating it would get to be for Titus if every time he appointed an elder, they decided to go fishing at a different pond? Yeah. I mean, is there a point at which you're the elder of this pond? You know, and then just to kind of play on the fishing analogy, because he said, I describe it like this. I feel like I've been fishing the same pond my whole life, and now there are like thousands of other fishermen at the same pond, and our lines are getting tangled, and everyone's fighting over stupid things, and one guy tries some new lure, and we go, oh, he got a fish, let's try it this way. Okay, but that's implying that everyone around the pond is a Methodist, is Episcopalian, is a Lutheran, is a Baptist, and that we're all preaching the gospel.
Yeah, we're not.
But that's not fair.
No.
If we went to the city of Fayetteville that has about 500 churches on Sunday morning, and we had 500 members from Brian who had a clipboard or an iPad, that would be even cooler with an interconnected kind of a thing. And then we just, you know, you went with your iPad, Steve, and you said, you know, you're, number one, you evaluate the three songs or whatever, number of music. Was it God-centered? Was it God-glorifying? Were you pointed to the gospel? All right. Was a Bible verse used? Did they open their Bibles? Was the gospel proclaimed? Just imagine, can you imagine how cool that would be? You just register what you're at, and it feeds into some giant Google Doc that you could then sort, and you could go, man, we went to 500 churches.
Majority of them didn't touch the church.
Yeah, 20 of them is where we heard the gospel. The death, burial, and resurrection of Jesus Christ for your sins. The exclusivity of Christ. I mean, just because a guy is standing with a fishing pole doesn't mean he's got the right bait on, doesn't mean he knows how to pull the hook. It doesn't mean anything. It just means he's standing at the same pond. I mean, is America such a Christian nation that there's no longer a need to evangelize in America?
No, that's for sure.
No, I mean,
that's a for sure no. Right.
Right. I mean,
I guess the biggest contrast would be that is there not a place in America where a person who really is desiring to know God couldn't know God?
Yes, you're right. Sure.
I guess in contrast to somewhere you're in right. Asia.
That. Right. But, you know, I struggle with this one because, so the thing, the backside of that says if some place is overfished, that fish quit needing the gospel and quit eating the gospel. The whole point in America is the church has ruined it, and now God can't save anybody anymore. I mean, that's a pretty common narrative. Well,
but I would say that Paul says that they have to hear.
Right, but I'm just saying.
And some areas.
So what do you do with Cornelius? What do you do with Cornelius?
That's a miraculous thing. I don't know.
Right, but we know that it's typically not like that, and your point is well taken.
What do you mean it's typically not like that?
Like someone just out in Africa, just staring up into the sky, suddenly, you know, someone appears to them and preaches.
But he's referenced as a God-fearer, right? So he's praying to the God of the Bible, and
right,
and he gets answered.
I mean, we typically know that if you grow up in a country that's Muslim, you're probably most likely going to follow Islam. I mean, it's just the chances.
Or for really the Buddhists good. And the Hindu.
Right. But I guess my question is, and this is the one, I guess, that really, for me, still hasn't been answered, is, so what do I do with the fact that there are places in the world that have less, you know,
truth
Bibles in their own language and all of that? That, I mean, obviously that's true. That's a true statement. But does that mean then that God... you know, that the gospel is done being effective in America. I mean, it just doesn't sound like that's the answer to me. That, well, because we're so overexposed in America that God's done with us and now we need to move on to these other countries.
I don't think Chan's saying that, though. Is that what Chan's saying? Isn't Chan saying that he just wants to find a pond that nobody's fishing?
Mm-hmm.
Right, and I suppose that's a second part of that, because what the idea is that finding a pond where there's not as much overexposure is more important, because we've already done all the exposure to America of the gospel. It's been done. It's either hasn't worked or it is working, whatever, however you want to take that. And then now what we need to do is, in order to feel like we're being useful with our time, I need to go to a country where it's not overexposed, and I need to start because
so that I can catch more fish,
right? And
or I feel more useful.
Boom! I think that's part of it.
But I mean, I don't think there's, I don't see anything different in what he's saying than all the missionary, or the majority of missionaries that you've heard come to your church over the years.
Right? Yeah.
You know, they all come in, and you know, I felt God calling me to wherever I went, and you know, He broke my heart, and man, we could use more people, and you know, if you're on board, love to take you too, and you need to do it, and
but I think there's
on and on. Not that they're going to twist your arm, but they're at least presenting the call, kind of like him.
Yeah.
Chan has been a pastor that's continually going on mission trips, and he's...
And there's another part to it, too, that we kind of see overlooking in this idea is I think he's tired of all the fighting.
Right. I can see that from what he says.
And if I'm over, here where nobody's at, who's going to fight with me? These people are just simply hungry.
Right.
They're not worried about, am I Baptist? Am I Presbyterian? Am I Methodist? Am I Calvinist? Am I Arminian? I mean, he's preaching in a school that is, it's not Methodist. It's Wesleyan Arminian, which is Methodist. but they identify themselves more pre.
Mm-hmm. Because Charles people in the past couldn't get along,
right? So they don't want to label themselves Methodist because of, but they have the Wesleyan Arminian theology, which is where they're at. That's what Azusa Pacific is. But then you figure that's in the back. That's basically in the backyard of John MacArthur.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then there's another mega church out there, Shepherds of the Hills, and they're very denominational, charismatic.
Well, Chan has his own institute now, or seminary, I believe.
I guess that is interesting, because if you go to another country where basically all you're focused on is the gospel, you get to get back to the purity of the gospel. Because, I mean, when you're talking to folks who, like he says, has never even heard the narrative of the Old Testament and New Testament, then that's your mission.
Yeah, except the fact that I know kids across the street who barely heard the narrative of the thing. I mean, I just...
And you can make that argument that the number of false doctrines in America makes it harder.
And then there's got to be a frustration being in Southern California Has Orange County hit the tipping point yet? The idea of... I think they have, or they're close to it. I know a couple of places in California have where it's hit the tipping point that now... Latin Americans are the majority within the population. So with that being said, you're going to have that familial Roman Catholic tie. That's super hard to break.
I almost wonder if he, you know, because I used to listen to him a lot, YouTube or sermon audio or whatever, you know, before I got to Berean. And I know he brought up more than once, like he would go to a place like this college and he would just basically preach what he read that morning. And like, I almost think like with Jesus, you almost get this idea, you know, wash off the dirt off your feet and go on. Or he would go to Nazareth and go, you know, you guys just don't, you're not going to hear, you're not going to believe, I'll go somewhere else. And then you almost have the idea with Paul too, with Lystra, I think. And he hits like two or three cities, and I think it's in the book of Acts where he gets like stoned in prison. They want to riot, and he just basically, I believe the phrase is like, just wash his hands and he's like out. I wonder if that's kind of like Francis Chan kind of opinion or belief, or like his experience with American Christianity. Because it's like you said, these kids don't know the gospel, but I know the 10th grade class, I'm telling them the gospel every week and they just don't get it. And it's just like, you know, sounding brass or whatever, and they just won't listen.
All right, let's finish the article. The former pastor at Cornerstone Community Church in California, Chan, has ministered in the United States for over 20 years. He admitted that facing the reality of leaving the United States caused him to be a little nostalgic. But amid his doubts, Chan said the words of 2 Corinthians 2:4 convicted him. The verse reads, "But I have renounced the hidden things dishonestly, not walking in craftiness, nor handling the word of God deceitfully, but by manifestation of the truth, commending ourselves to every man's conscience in the sight of God." I thought, man, I try to be too clever sometimes rather than just openly saying it, especially in this day and age. Chan said, explaining he's been tempted to slowly ease listeners into understanding who God is instead of giving an open statement of the truth. But that's not the way Jesus taught. He stressed Jesus would get in front of the crowd, and he says, hey, I'm about to leave here and be nailed to a cross, so unless you're willing to ditch your life and pick up the cross next to me and go get nailed to the cross, don't bother following me, because unless you deny yourself all those desires you have, all those dreams you have, unless you're ready to leave all that and pick up your cross and follow me, you can't be my disciple.
What I find interesting, and I want to be super supportive of his missionary effort. I'm not going to, like Jack said, if the Lord pricks your heart,
yeah,
and you want to go and you go, you have my respect.
Absolutely.
Especially when you leave something behind like he's leaving, the thing that he, you know, ministered, labored, built, you know, what we would say would be a celebrity status, really. But what I, you know, and I love, I mean, obviously these words are the truth. And this is the message of his book, right? That idea that this is a cross you're taking up.
Mm-hmm.
But what I find interesting is I meet a lot of folks, and this is just anecdotal, but I meet a lot of folks who are Chan fans, and they go to cell groups. What's the latest term for them? You know, the replacement for Sunday school class at somebody's house.
Life group,
where, you know,
care
children
group,
run
yeah.
around and they eat food and they talk, or they go over because
Bible
they like
study.
Writing. But, you know, so it's a Bible study, but they get like a Chan book and they go through the book, right? Those people that love him, just anecdotally, they don't strike me as this. His message hasn't gotten through to them. I mean, they're more in love than this world. And people I see, I know that's judgmental, but it's just like, you know, everything has to be trendy. You can't go to a church where, like, you know, heavens to Betsy, they're a little traditional. It's strange that with such a strong message that he has, so maybe his frustration is, you know, he's gone through this effort for the American, you know, for lack of a better word, consumer, and they're just not getting it. Like you say, your 10th grade class, you know, you say these things over and over, but, you know, these stupid devices and their video games are just so much in their life, you can't say a single thing to make an impact.
The Erasing Hell author said he realized that if he truly believes the gospel, he needs to just say it. If you don't believe it, then there's nothing I can do to talk you into it. I realized for years we keep trying different kinds of bait, but the truth is the fish just aren't biting. They're blinded. You almost get a sense, Jack, that we have an Arminian struggling with Calvinism.
Mm. Yep.
No, you think?
Well, he says they're blinded.
Yeah.
Well, if they're blinded, the God of this world has to do something, has blinded them, and so our God has to do something about that blindedness. You know, is because he's talking bait, and, well, I don't talk bait because I only have one message, John.
That's right.
I just have one message. I don't, you know, I think people, if they asked, we have not in the last 10 years been chasing after what other churches do.
No.
And I think he admits it when he says, sometimes I've been too clever.
Yeah.
So I think in the past 50 years, the modus operandi is to just go after the same gospel, but explain it in your own words that you can kind of write into a book, make popular, and that will do it. You know, if I just say it the right way, you know, the Bible didn't get it right. Let's change the Bible words. And it's, you know, it's not born again. It's
I
not
almost
believe.
Almost
it's got to be something
he's,
else.
He's still talking about the people who would be the pure church, the people who would truly preach the gospel, but they have different methods. Like I'm trying to think of guys that would be that, but like your traditional guys maybe, and then there's this new guy out of Southern Seminary going, well, if I can entertain them with some really good music and give them good lights and then preach the gospel, the pure gospel, that would be in agreeance with what the Bible teaches. But it's a different methodology as long as I can bring them in, or you might say a little more Arminian flavored or whatever, but I don't know. That would be more what I think he's alluding to with the baits, mm-hmm. different methodologies.
Maybe. He said, the book is slowly drifting. We've been so scared. We don't want to hurt their feelings. Don't offend. Suddenly we start speaking to not offend people, Chan said. The truth is, the word is becoming less and less, and people are just rising in their opinions, and they're just believing what they want to believe. People don't want to believe there's a day of judgment where they will stand before a holy God. Chan stressed, explaining most people want to believe they are good. Such is a lie. He declared, the Word of God says the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. It is a fearful thing to fall in the hands of a living God. How are you going to twist these words? Chan, who in 2012 launched a discipleship movement called Multiply with David Platt, warned that far too many Christians are concerned with appeasing non-believers in their feelings. He pointed out that Scripture warns against lukewarm Christianity. Jesus said, I'm knocking on the door. You want to get real with me? You ready to surrender to me? You ready to start submitting to his word, even if no one else does? Chan said, if your thoughts contradict this book, then you need to come under his thinking. Boy, he sure is loose with his applications. He's grabbing from Revelation where Jesus is knocking, and I'm going to come under this because I'm going to stand before him one day, and I'm going to be judged by him, and I don't want to be judged as a coward. That's the greatest joy you're going to find in life, is when you understand you have a holy, holy judge for a father who is rich in mercy and full of love for you and is knocking on the door. I don't know. I'll go back and defer to what Jack said. If the Lord's calling him to go to Asia, then he needs to go to Asia.
Yep, and if the Lord calls me to go to Asia or anywhere else, I need to do it.
You need to do it too. But until then, you know, because if you look at, you know, it's going to all the world, it's preach the gospel, it's make disciples, and then it's teaching them all things that I observed, even to the end. Mm-hmm. So there's an ongoing ministry as well as a ministry of salvation. It doesn't just stop.
And he is right. The majority of Christianity today is worried about offending the non-believers.
Sure. And the question is, at what point, Jack, is that no longer Christianity?
Well, I think it's when you begin to compromise to such a degree that you don't have the truth.
Right, which is what John says. That's what we talked about last week in 2 John. You know, you embrace truth and love, and at the point in which your love overcomes the
truth,
standing for the truth, then you've given up truth.
Yeah.
And you've caved on it. Mm-hmm.
Which isn't love.
Which isn't love, because now you're not embracing the truth that was given.
It's the world
and
love.
You're failing to love the truth.
Yeah, it's world love. And the thing of it is there's that what we want to have to understand is I can speak the absolute truth most of the time. Not all the time. Most of the time, politely and tactfully. And there are times when Christ even did it himself. Somebody just has to hear it in a very blunt, you're a viper kind of way.
And yet he still had compassion on him and still said, weep over you and I still want you to come to me.
Even the fact that he would be willing to say it that blunt is a compassionate act.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yes.
That was his love.
Because silence would put them in eternal damnation.
Yep. All right, well, we wish Francis Chan the absolute best under the grace of God. And what do you think? Do you have a thought? Share it with us on a comment under this podcast. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.